are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. Happy Monday, everybody. Today, we're going to recap yet another disappointing weekend for the Timberwolves. We'll talk about Friday's loss to Orlando. We'll spend some time on Sunday's loss to the Pelicans, including looking at individual studs and duds from the game against New Orleans. A quick reminder first, please subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. It always helps out when we have more subscribers on there. Make sure that we're getting in front of more ears, if you will. First, I do want to open just generally talking about this weekend versus last weekend and the symmetry with hope going into the weekend and then just a crushing pair of defeats over the weekend that kind of brought Timberwolves fans that had hoped for a mini breakout of sorts by the D'Angelo Russell-led Timberwolves. Hopes kind of came crashing down for the second consecutive weekend. Remember, a little over a week ago, so I guess 2 weeks ago, Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, the Timberwolves had won in Miami and had a chance to win in Orlando on Friday against a below 500 team, certainly a good opportunity, and they fell flat. They gave up a ton of points to Orlando, lost in it wasn't a blowout, but they lost by double digits in Orlando. And then 2 days later, a matinee loss at home on Sunday to Dallas. This week, the Timberwolves won in New Orleans on Tuesday. They beat the Bulls at home on Wednesday, winning two straight games for the first time in almost 2 months, and or almost exactly 2 months, and then also winning the first both games, the front and back ends of a back-to-back on consecutive nights for the first time all year. And they had two home games coming up against sub-500 teams, Orlando on Friday, New Orleans on Sunday. They had just beaten New Orleans. Felt like they're not going to lose to the Magic twice in a year. Sure seemed like they could build something of a winning streak, maybe three in a row, maybe even four in a row in three out of four games that they could win. But then, alas, an ugly, deflating loss to the Magic for the second Friday in a row, followed by a flat performance on a Sunday afternoon at Target Center on Sunday. Almost exactly what happened the last weekend, even down to playing Orlando on Friday for the second straight week, and losing a 2:30 p.m. start at Target Center on Sunday. Maybe something about the Friday. I don't know. We're going to get into each of these games individually, but it's just kind of, you go into the weekend with a little bit of hope, and then those hopes come crashing down to earth pretty quickly. Last Friday, the Timberwolves allowed Orlando to score a season-high 136 points, the most points the Magic had scored so far this season in a single game. This Friday, the Magic still scored 132 points, so I don't know, that's probably their second-highest total of the season. But they did shoot a season-best 60.7% from the field. That's 66.0%. 60.7% from the field for Orlando. And here's the thing, they were only 7 of 21 from beyond the arc. It's not like they just got hot from deep. The Wolves were contesting shots and the Magic couldn't miss. No, that's 60.7 with just shooting 33% inside the arc. Think about that. Think about just how good that is in terms of a shooting percentage. If we go ahead and take out the three-point shots in this game, this team still shoots 69.8%. So that means on non-three-point attempts, the Magic shot 69.8%, basically a 70% game inside the arc. That's primarily in the paint, of course, but that's still far too good of a shooting percentage for an NBA team to give up. 70% on non-three-point attempts against the Orlando Magic. Remember, we talked about this in the preview on Friday. The Magic is a team that entered play on Friday 25th in the league in offensive rating. And the Timberwolves allowed them to shoot 70% on non-three-point attempts. This team has really struggled defensively lately. And remember, we talked about this around the trade deadline on this podcast that the Timberwolves actually are a little bit underrated defensively the first part of the season. That wasn't the issue. They were like 15th to 17th in defensive rating for most of the season. It was actually the offense that was bad. And believe it or not, swapping out Robert Covington and a couple of other pieces, Gorgui Dieng, for, you know, more Naz Reid minutes and Malik Beasley and, you know, I guess D'Angelo Russell, has made the offense better, but the defense worse, almost equally. And granted, the Wolves have actually, winning percentage-wise, been a little bit better since the trade deadline. They've won, what, now four games since the deadline. And given how bad they'd been prior to that, I mean, you know, not that bad. But the defense has been atrocious. It's easily been the worst defense in the league, and you simply can't outscore teams every night, even bad teams. Well, the Magic aren't a bad team, but even below 500 teams like the Magic and the Pelicans, who both, you know, have shots at making the playoffs still. So they're not awful teams, but still games that if the Wolves want to show that they, as currently constructed, could contend for the playoffs next year. Obviously, sans Karl-Anthony Towns right now with the wrist fracture, but really the Timberwolves needed to show better performances than what they did this weekend. Going back to Orlando, this is a team that's 27th in the league in field goal percentage. They're 27th in field goal percentage. They shoot 44.1% a game, and they hung essentially 61% on the Wolves in this game. 70% on non-3-point attempts. 61% overall, 70% if you take out the threes. And they came into the game at 44%, 27th best in the league. They're 28th in points per game. They were 25th in offensive rating. They're actually now up to 24th, basically, because of this game. They actually went on to beat Houston on Sunday by 20. So a couple of back-to-back impressive games for the Magic this weekend. But that's awful. I mean, the Timberwolves simply, that's not something that they can let happen. They can't give up that many points. The biggest issue in this game was the paint defense, and it was defense overall, of course, but Nikola Vucevic and Aaron Gordon were dominant, and then the Wolves, in a theme that we'll talk more about related to Sunday's game, could not stay in front of the guards for the Magic. DJ Augustine, Terrence Ross, Michael Carter-Williams all scored between 16 and 18 points. Markelle Fultz had 24 on just 14 shots, and he was actually scoring a lot from the mid-range. It wasn't just in the paint. But the Wolves were letting the guards get to where they wanted to go. There was no rim protection at all, and there was also no rebounding. Naz Reid had only 3 rebounds in 28 minutes. He's your starting center. For the game, the Timberwolves were out-rebounded 45 to 36. I don't know how you... I mean, there weren't as many rebounds to be had because this was such an offensive explosion, especially for the Magic. But I don't know how an NBA team goes 48 minutes with 36 rebounds. Naz Reid had 3. Juancho Hernan Gomez led the team with 8. Nobody else had more than 5. And that was D'Angelo Russell in just 23 minutes, had 5 rebounds. So the story of this game was just a complete lack of defense, poor rebounding, mostly paint defense, but also even guarding, allowing opposing guards to get to where they wanted to get on the floor was really bad. We're not officially going to do studs and duds for this game, but if we did, D'Angelo Russell had only 5 points on 2 of 14 shooting. Worst game as a Wolf by far, and that was the biggest issue. Malik Beasley was really good. He had 29 points, 14 of 21 shooting. And then off the bench, Jake Lehman, Jordan McLaughlin both had good games. They scored 14 points, and we'll talk about Lehman a little bit more on Sunday. He's certainly starting to show signs of life here the last few games. But overall, just a really disappointing loss in a game that the Wolves, on a Friday night at Target Center, after winning 2 in a row, a couple days rest, you really like to see a better performance from Minnesota. There's really not much else to say about this game. However, a lot of the same themes from a team on a team level were also present in Sunday's loss. We'll dig a little bit more into that here in just a moment. Before we get into that, I did want to mention our friends at Indeed. When you start your hiring process, you may have questions. Will you find good applicants to choose from? What about education and experience? And how will you know that you've made the right hire? Indeed is here to help. Millions of great candidates use Indeed every day to find their next opportunity. You can post a job in minutes and use screener questions to help create your short list of applicants fast. Also, add skills tests to your job posts so you can be confident in your applicants' abilities. Their library of more than 50 skills tests ranges from industry-specific skills like accounting to general aptitude tests like critical thinking. Indeed gives you the smart tools to make hiring decisions quickly and to be confident that you're making the right hire for your team. Post your job today at Indeed.com/lockedon and get a free sponsored job upgrade on your first posting. That's Indeed.com/lockedon. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Offer valid through March 31st, 2020. Okay, now that we've talked through the ineptitude of Friday's loss to Orlando, I guess we'll move on to talk about the ineptitude of Sunday's loss to the New Orleans Pelicans. Remember, the Wolves beat the Pelicans less than a week ago. It was last Tuesday in New Orleans. It was a fun game. The Wolves scored 139. Of course, they gave up 134, so that's a perfect example of the Wolves simply outscoring somebody. That was probably Juancho Hernan Gomez's best game as a Timberwolf. He had 16-8. Nas Reed had 13 and 14, plus three assists, three steals, two blocks, only one turnover. That was probably his best game, or certainly top two or three games as a Wolf. D'Angelo Russell had 23 and 8. Blake Beasley had 28 on 11 of 13 shooting. This was also the game when Jordan McLaughlin was 6 of 7 shooting, 13 and 6. So McLaughlin and Beasley were kind of the stars of this game. And it was a relatively impressive win from the Timberwolves, and it led into that back-to-back win or back-to-back set of wins when they also beat Chicago on Wednesday. So there was some reason to think that the Wolves could come back and win this game on Sunday after losing on Friday to Orlando. Remember last time around, the Wolves did give up. I mean, basically the starters for the Pelicans had a good game against the Wolves last time around. They couldn't really slow down Jrue Holiday. He had 27 and 12, but they did a good job against Zion Williamson. He had 25 and 8, but he shot 10 of 19 from the field in the first matchup. So it seemed like the Wolves had somewhat of a recipe to slow those guys down. Unfortunately, that did not happen in this game. Jrue Holiday had, and I lost my box score here, but Jrue Holiday had 37 in the matchup. Here we go. Jrue Holiday had 37 on Sunday against the Wolves, and he shot 13 of 20, 3 of 8 beyond the arc, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, and just a really dominant performance. Got to where he wanted on the floor whenever he wanted. It was exactly like what happened to the Wolves against Markelle Fultz and Michael Carter-Williams on Friday. The Wolves could not contain in the pick and roll, but turns out Jrue Holiday is more dynamic than those guys and can score from the perimeter. He can score in the paint. He can just flat out score. The Wolves really had problems slowing him down. 13 of 20 shooting, 3 of 8 from beyond the arc. He shot 9 free throws, making 8 of them, and was just awesome. Lonzo Ball was really good too. He had 18 points, 8 assists, 5 rebounds. He did turn the ball over 7 times, but like 3 of those were in a weird stretch in the first quarter where he was extremely sloppy with the ball. But overall, he made 4 threes on 8 attempts and was really good, especially down the stretch as the Wolves were trying to come back. Lonzo Ball really gave them a tough time. And again, the Wolves did okay against Zion Williamson. There was a stretch in the first half shortly after the Lonzo Ball turnover stretch where it was suddenly a Zion Williamson dunk stretch, and he had back-to-back alley-oops and a couple of other dunks, and he finished with 23-7, 9-15 shooting, and only attempted 6 free throws. So the Wolves actually did an okay job against him. And Josh Okogie, it was mostly Josh Okogie, but also a little bit of Jarrett Culver, did a good job on Brandon Ingram. He had 15 points, 6 of 12 shooting, 0 of 2 beyond the arc, and really was limited, just like he was the first time these teams played. So I don't know. I guess if the Wolves, he also had 5 turnovers, by the way. If the Wolves could just have Josh Okogie and Jarrett Culver guard everybody on the perimeter, then they'd be in decent shape. Actually, this is a little bit of a side tangent here, but D'Angelo Russell and a little bit, you know, also Malik Beasley are really struggling to contain opposing guards. The Wolves may have to look at having Jarrett Culver and Josh Okogie share the floor at times just to have their length and athleticism on the perimeter. Beasley's not very big. D'Angelo Russell's not super athletic and not a great defender. We all know that. The Wolves might need to look at staggering Russell and Beasley's minutes a little bit more to try and hide some of their defensive deficiencies. And Okogie's been decent enough on offense, and Culver has shown some improvement there. I mean, part of the benefit of this, of the trade deadline, was the Wolves didn't have to have Okogie and Culver share the floor as often because those guys, neither one of them is a good enough shooter to truly play them together. But as it turns out, neither one of Beasley or Russell is probably a good enough defender to play them together. So I don't know if it's just stealing some minutes here and there where you play the matchups and get your two best defenders on the court and just, you know, I mean, you have to have either Russell or Beasley on the court in that scenario. Like, there should never be a scenario where you've got Jordan McLaughlin, as good as he's been, you should never have Jordan McLaughlin, Okogie, and Culver all on the floor in the backcourt at the same time. So maybe it's Russell, Okogie, and Culver, or maybe Culver runs the points a little bit. You have him on the floor with Malik Beasley, I almost did the Michael Beasley thing with Malik Beasley and Josh Okogie. But I just don't think that you can continually, the Russell Beasley backcourt has been really, excuse me. Yeah. The Russell Beasley backcourt has been really struggling lately to contain opposing guards. And so the Wolves are going to either need to figure out a way to improve that. And maybe it's getting some help in the pick and roll, changing up the coverages a little bit, or just staggering the rotations a little bit to get Culver and Okogie a few more minutes. Cause both those guys are pretty good defensively in this game and actually pretty good offensively too, as we'll get into here in a moment. But just a side note about how disappointing that defense was and how the Wolves might go about fixing it. Basically in this game, the Wolves were down early. They finished the first quarter down by 7. They did come back a little bit in the second quarter and took a brief lead midway through the quarter, but then the Pelicans kind of came back and things really unraveled in the third quarter for the Wolves. Malik Beasley led the way for the Wolves. He had 21 points, but most of his damage came as the Wolves were already down double digits in the second half and were trying to dig their way out. D'Angelo Russell had 19 points and 18 shots. Hit his first couple attempts and looked like he was going to have a big night after a terrible night on Friday, but then really struggled in the middle portion of the game, scored a little bit at the end, but ended up being 0-7 beyond the arc. And we talked about this about a week ago. We had, I think we called it fun with numbers at the time, with just how good the newcomers were shooting from three. D'Angelo Russell's come back down to earth hard over the last week in terms of his three-point shooting. And he's going to need to, that's going to need to balance out a little bit, because he went from shooting about a career best to his worst three-point shooting percentage overall in years with the Timberwolves. So hopefully that does balance out a little. But yeah, things really kind of started to slide out of the Wolves' control in the third quarter. And ultimately, this game wasn't very close. It became more than a 20-point deficit in the fourth quarter. The Wolves pushed back and got it to 10 a couple of times with 4 minutes to play, and then again with 2.5 minutes to play or so. But they were never seriously in the game towards the end, just close enough where they had to keep, you know, D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, and those guys on the court. But it was never really a serious comeback attempt. And it was the second straight Sunday the Wolves were just completely flat. And while the offense, it was okay, it wasn't great. And the defense was, again, horrible, as we've talked about at length. All right, next up, we're going to look at studs and duds from this game, who played the best and who played the worst individually for the Timberwolves. In Sunday's loss to the Pelicans, the Timberwolves did have 7 guys scoring double figures, really kind of spreading around the production, but it was still not too hard to come up with some studs and duds from this game due to overall offensive efficiency and also defense really factored in with how bad the Wolves were defensively this weekend. It was easy to hone in on the guys that weren't bad. I alluded to this earlier, but Josh Okogie definitely hits the studs list. He's probably the best player from start to finish in this game for the Wolves. He had 12 points. Only shot 3 of 8, but got to the free throw line and made all 5 of his free throw attempts. He had 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 3 steals, and only 1 turnover in 29 minutes. Did a really good job on Brandon Ingram when he was guarding him. Remember, Ingram only had 15 points and committed 5 turnovers in 40 minutes, and Okogie was a big part of that. Was good in transition. Hit a step-up three-pointer when the defender was sagging off of him. He's been good enough from three-point range lately. I mean, if he can shoot roughly league average all the time, then he can be a 30-minute-a-game guy like he has been lately, and that should be okay for the Wolves because he's good enough on defense. So a good game all around from him. Good to see Josh play a lot better lately. I'm also going to give Malik Beasley a nod for a stud in this game. It actually wasn't that great of a game from Beasley, but he was the one guy who consistently showed a fire and the ability to score when he needed to. He had 21 points. It took him 20 shots to get there. He was 8 of 20 shooting, but he was 4 of 7 beyond the arc. The Timberwolves actually only had 3 guys that made a 3 in this game. Beasley hit 4, James Johnson hit 3, and Josh Okogie hit 1, which is crazy, but there we are. Beasley also had 9 rebounds and only committed 1 turnover in this game. No assists, which isn't great. He had 1 steal, and actually he was a team worst, tied for the team worst plus minus, individual plus minus, with a minus 26. And that's just an example of the plus minus being kind of goofy for one game is one part of it. The other part of it is defense hasn't actually been all that great, but he was good enough on offense in this game, in a game that the Wolves actually struggled to find an offensive rhythm, that I think he still deserves a stud. 21-9 with only 1 turnover in 32 minutes, 4 of 7 from 3 when the team couldn't make threes. I think context matters there. A lot of his points did come as the Wolves were kind of in this state of a flurry of offense at the end to try and get back into the game. But they still count. And he also was pretty good early in the game. There was just this stretch in the middle where he didn't do a whole lot. But he still gets a stud in a game that overall was, I guess, a dud for the Timberwolves. The third stud I'm going to split, which is cheating a little bit, but I'm going to split it between Jake Lehman and Jarrett Culver. Both of those guys had stretches in this game where they were really, really, really good off the bench for the Wolves. Jake Lehman had a huge second quarter. He scored 11 points for the game, and I think all of that, maybe 9 of the 11 points, were in the second quarter. He shot 4 of 6. He missed his only three-point attempt. He had 1 rebound, 1 steal. For the second straight game, I think it's fair to say the Wolves would like to see more non-scoring production out of Lehman. He's got to rebound a little bit better with his athleticism and the fact that he's playing some 4 when he's on the court. He was on the court as part of a small ball lineup at times with James Johnson and Juancho Hernan Gomez kind of both playing the center role. I don't know that Lehman played a whole lot next to Naz Reid. So they need more than 1 rebound in 19 minutes out of Jake. But he did, he had a monster, he posterized Derek Favors on the right baseline with a one-handed dunk. And he had an alley-oop just before that where he was fouled across the arms. They didn't call it, and he missed the dunk. That was one of his 2 misses. His other miss was a 3-point attempt. But a good game from Lehman, who's a +9 in those 19 minutes. And it was also a season high, or not a season high, but I guess a high in minutes since he returned from his 41-game layoff due to injury. So look for him to continue to increase his minutes load. And, you know, if the Wolves get this kind of a game, add a couple rebounds, he played decent on defense. There were a couple of possessions where he was about the only Timberwolf down in a defensive stance and ready to guard. You know, he'll start to see more minutes. I don't know that he's going to see any starts the rest of the season. The Wolves really need to see what they have in like, for instance, Hernan Gomez and Naz Reid. But Lehman should see those minutes continue to increase down the stretch of the season. Jarrett Culver added 10 points, 3 rebounds, 2 steals, and an assist. No turnovers in 21 minutes, 4 of 7 shooting. He continues to improve in the turnover category. Obviously, he's handling the ball a little bit less than he did early in the season, or actually a lot less. He's playing not really any point guard at this point. But 10-3 and 2 steals in 21 minutes, 4 of 7 shooting is something the Wolves will take every night from Culver. He did end up with a +5 off the bench as well. And again, was good defensively. He matched up with Brandon Ingram a little bit and did a good job, both him and Okogie. And again, not really sharing the floor together anymore, which is one of the things the Wolves wanted to get away from after the trade deadline because they're so offensively challenged. But they combined to shoot 7 of 15. They combined to score 22 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, and only 1 turnover in a combined 50 minutes. So, I mean, that's what the Wolves need out of that duo. This is exactly the sort of game that Okogie and Culver need to have. The problem is that the Wolves will get this sort of a game out of them, and then they'll waste the game because the stars, you know, Russell and those guys won't play well, and they'll end up losing. And then on top of that, there's these nights where neither Culver or Okogie has a good game, and they're, you know, they shoot like 1 of 8 from beyond the arc, and they don't get any rebounds, and it seems like it's feast or famine. And it also seems like it comes in pairs. Okogie and Culver together will have a good game, or together will have a bad game. And so the Wolves really need more consistency out of that duo. And I made the prediction after the deadline, I think on this podcast, certainly on Dunking with Wolves, the blog where I write and co-edit the site, that one of those guys won't be on the team next year because it's hard to have 2 guys who are no offense, all defense wings. However, they've both shown enough flashes on offense. The Wolves might continue the experiment a little bit longer just to make sure that they know what they have, because both guys still have upside. Both guys are still a little bit tantalizing with their athleticism and the things that they can do. So it'll be interesting to see what the Wolves choose to do there moving forward. I should mention D'Angelo Russell followed up his worst game as a Timberwolf with probably his second worst game as a Timberwolf, 19 points on just 6 of 18 shooting. So do the math, 33% shooting from the field, 0 of 7 beyond the three-point line. He did make all 7 of his free throw attempts. He had 6 rebounds, 5 assists, but he also committed 5 turnovers. He was a +10 on the night, which was actually the Wolves' best individual plus-minus. But again, him being a +10 and Malik Beasley a -26 is definitely misleading. Both guys struggled defensively, but Beasley made the 4 three-pointers and overall was, I mean, he was more active on the glass and at least more active defensively. He had a tougher assignments for the most part. So, I mean, Russell doesn't quite deserve a dud in this game, but it wasn't a good game for D'Angelo. And he tried to follow up that game on Friday with a high-volume performance on Sunday, and it didn't work out in his favor. Still ended up playing 35 minutes in a game that the Wolves lost by 13 and were down by more than 20 for a lot of the fourth quarter. So all around a frustrating game for the Wolves, and really a frustrating weekend. As we talked about earlier, there isn't much to write home about at all for the Timberwolves from this weekend. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of Locked On Wolves. The Timberwolves take on the Rockets in Houston on Tuesday night. This starts the longest road trip of the season for the Wolves. They'll play the next six on the road: Houston, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Portland, Phoenix, Utah. That is three likely playoff teams, three for sure playoff teams, and then three teams battling for the eight seed in the West. And again, longest road trip of the season. So things are about to get really tough. Houston game is Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. We will spend Tuesday's podcast largely previewing that matchup between the Wolves and the Rockets. And that will be our next show as we kick off this road trip. That's all we have for you today. Thanks once again for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on the biggest stories. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves. That's at Locked On T-Wolves. Don't forget the T. That wraps up this edition of Locked On Wolves. Now, tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of Hollinger and Duncan, one of the national podcasts here at the Locked On Network. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.